Hello, everybody. This is Matt Whitliff, and here with you again for another installment of the Salesforce SpringML podcast. I'm here today with Dennis Jackmack, one of the consultants here at SpringML. How are you doing today, Dennis?
I'm good. Busy weeks right now, but doing good. How are you, Matt?
That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. So let's get right into it. Just in terms of introductions, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, who are you and what are you responsible for here at SpringML?
Yeah, so as you do know, I'm an analytics consultant here at SpringML, and my focus, at least when it comes to building and contributing, is machine learning and models, right? So solving problems via what used to be mostly regression analysis. And the way I got here is back in the end of 2016, Salesforce purchased a company called BeyondCore, and that is eventually what turned into Einstein Discovery. And so my curiosity was satisfied by learning about how it works, and that's sort of how I made my path here.
Yeah, right. So you came over, you were at BeyondCore when Salesforce acquired BeyondCore, and you got to spend a couple of years working at Salesforce and now here with us. How long have you been with us?
You know, there was a contract out in October. That's when I first started working here. So I suppose now, I can't believe it's May. That puts us at 7 or 8 months at this point. It's crazy to say.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. So let's kind of dig in and talk a little bit deeper on the machine learning side of things, right? With your deep experience and kind of coming over from BeyondCore and you know, spending time at Salesforce with the product, with Einstein Discovery. So what are some of the things you notice when working with customers, when we're working with them to solve business needs with machine learning?
Yeah, what are some of the things I notice? I think the basis of what drives a lot of thinking around these solutions is the hype around machine learning and AI. And
yeah.
Obviously, they have their own ideas on what AI is, and some consider it hyper advanced. And so a lot of the discussion tends to be around the model itself, which really it's a means to an end. It's supposed to serve a purpose. And there's general assumptions like, you don't have to tell a model much before it starts solving a problem. That's definitely something I see a lot. And another issue is the people that we talk to, our clients, they understand their business really well, obviously, right? They know their metrics, they know their needs. But what they're not able to do, no matter what you ask them, almost no matter what you ask them, is express what they hope to gain from predictive modeling. And that's where they can need a little bit of help.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great insight. And so, you alluded a little bit to some of the challenges that come across and various pitfalls. Some of it is, I imagine from an expectation standpoint, and some of it is just like in the actual process and development delivery of machine learning. Can you talk to us and share, your thoughts around some of these key pitfalls and challenges that that pop up in the machine learning type projects?
Yes, I think we basically touched on it a moment ago, but the way or the kind of AI we're using here, right, the machine learning, the specific kind, especially the way it started with regression analysis, it's good at solving a specific and repeating problem, right? And you need to find out who it can help solve that. And so it can give you an intuition on something that you might not understand as well intuitively as a pro who's been going at it for 10 years, right? And the general, how do we best say this? Like, the application is way more important than the sophistication of your model.
Yeah.
The fact that you make the most out of whatever data you have and implement the model into the business processes at your company, that is what will make you successful, not a hyper complicated, sophisticated model.
No, I love that. That's a great way to put it. And one thing I say sometimes when talking to customers about their journey with machine learning is, things like the classic trope phrase of "don't let perfect be the enemy of good," right? And we can take modeling to the point where you're getting to, quote, 87% accuracy, but usually if you're at 82% accuracy, right, like that's good enough. And sometimes the extra effort to get it, refined that much further isn't worth it, especially if you're not making use of it from an application standpoint. So I kind of love what you're saying there.
Yeah, definitely. Surfacing things to the people at the right time is also important, right? That is actually the beauty of these machine learning tools, is that you can generate an insight that's relevant to the situation that a user is seeing on their screen and feed it to them right there. So they don't have to go look at a dashboard or find some other tool where they can find the necessary information. I love this word that's been coined, operationalize it. It's important.
Yeah, no, cool. So, when you're working with customers, what are some things that you notice that customers seem to focus on, and how would you suggest they, adjust some of their thinking to help better solve business problems with machine learning?
Yeah, we did address this a little bit in these other questions, so I'll try not to repeat myself, right? But a lot of people, because they assume that AI is so sophisticated it can get behind a problem that we can't think through, think that it can inform extremely complex decisions, right? Now, it can help me make a really complicated decision by virtue of me studying the analysis that comes out of the tool. But in general, in order to gain actual value, it's much more sensible to use it repetitively to a broad audience that can consume it and make slightly better, slightly more informed decisions on how to prioritize their time and optimize their efforts than it is to find the most highly sophisticated group of people that need a recommendation in the business, right? So the tool won't replace a management consulting effort, right? It's just a tool that gives you a recommendation. So, my general advice, I suppose, is that it is apply it broadly to a recurring issue and make sure you monitor it. Monitor your
Yeah.
model. Salesforce now has a function where you can just track the actual outcome and it'll continually adjust itself, right? So, it can append data itself, it can correct the model itself. Now, little bit of tuning and handiwork does go into that quite a bit, but the functionality is there, and that's important in success with a model.
Yeah. So, you've worked on quite a few projects with machine learning over the years and with us over the last several months. What are some things that, like, from a formula best practices perspective, that you recommend in terms of leading to success, right, in embarking and engaging on a machine learning project?
Yeah, so the most successful projects share traits like it's a problem worth solving, right? That's one of the issues. It's a problem that has therefore value tied to it in some way, and can make a model successful because the usage actually leads to something. And having a specific business problem that we're solving, like I said, ideally a consumer in mind, right? Because if you haven't thought about which actor in your organization is going to benefit from this, then I can hazard a guess that you haven't put too much thought into what are the processes that need to happen so that they can be successful, and what actions can I recommend to them based on the model, right? And success comes from, in a lot of cases, actually not expecting a deployed model to be successful instantly, right? We like to monitor the success, and we like to make sure that before we deploy it to general availability, that we kind of ghost test ride it in a way where power users can make sure, okay, this is what we're seeing here. This reflects what we know about our business. This is valuable for decision making, such that when you expand it over to a more general audience, it will be ready for consumption, right?
Got it. So Dennis, one thing I've noticed in, talking to lots of customers and working with Salesforce with this technology, with Einstein Discovery, right, is the perceptions are kind of all over the map, right? There's sometimes a perception that, embarking, engaging on, projects with machine learning, it's going to take like 12 months or 15 months. It's like this massively complex thing to do. On the other end of the spectrum, sometimes, Einstein Discovery is made out to be so easy that it's like, oh, you just click a couple buttons and throw in a data set, and there you go. You got some answers. You got a model, right? And the
Yeah.
truth clearly lies somewhere in between. Just give us a quick rundown. Like, obviously, there's lots of caveats and exceptions and things like this to the rule, but like, what's a good rule of thumb, you think, in terms of a solid pilot model and like how long it's going to take a customer to kind of get through that kind of initial journey?
Yeah, it's hard to make a blanket statement in an abstract fashion about all this, right? But like, let's draw the lower bound first, which is that, remember that first model that I built, what a short timeline that was. Those were 6 weeks. I would consider that a very condensed timeline, right? On the other hand, there's a way of treating every problem academically and taking each project to the maximum and making sure you have the most unique features and the most interesting model and the highest accuracy and all that. And the sweet spot, you know, without wanting to throw out a number of weeks or months, lies in achieving the complexity that you can demand of the data that you have. That is a general first, good first step to measure, like, okay, here are the data points that we've recorded. Here's how much of this we have. Measure by that how sophisticated you can make your model, and that'll give you an idea of what kind of timeline there is. So, you know, going under, you know, a month or two, I'm not sure if it's really wise, but it's hard again to provide an abstract general answer.
Yeah, good deal. And then, you know, another question here is, you know, Einstein Discovery provides kind of an interesting toolkit and a unique fit in the machine learning, statistical forecasting type of space. And there's lots of tools out there, lots of different technologies. You know, talk to us about, in your experience, what makes the Einstein Discovery toolkit different and unique? And you know how it might differ from you know say you know an army of data scientists you know building with PhDs building a model with C++ or R or what have you versus you know some other tools and techniques.
Yeah, well, how is it easier to deal with in a hall full of data scientists? Maybe it's easy to communicate with the model, with the tool. No, I'm just joking. But I think the best part of it is simply that it's native, which means implementing it is actually not as complicated as it is with an external model, because at time of scoring, you need to have all your data points available. And if you start going outside of the system that you're writing your prediction into, to do that, then that demands a whole really complicated data architecture. There's a lot of work that goes into ensuring that the right data is available at the right time. And I really believe that its big strength is that it is indeed native and that you can basically use it. I don't want to call it a wizard, right? But it is a step-by-step process where you hook up, here's where I want these scores or these predictions to go back to, and this is the supplemental data that it's based on. So, well, you know, there's value in maybe running exploratory data analysis outside. In general, it does almost everything you need without you having to address a bunch of separate tools, because using an external AutoML tool isn't just the tool itself, right? Suddenly you need Amazon S3 and some way to get the data from here to there. So.
And integrate back into that whole piece that we talked about earlier, which is making it applicable, right? And being part of a way that users can use it. So,
Exactly.
yeah, last question, Denise, and I ask this to all of our guests. What is your all-time favorite analytics use case? So, you know, this could be something like, you know, you've worked on as in school, as a hobby, as fun, something you just read about that you think is just awesome. You know, or something that just kind of comes up a lot, you know, for you. Just answer it however you want. Like, what is your favorite analytics use case?
Yeah, you know, you're saying analytics, so I'm hoping you don't want an actual machine learning answer. My
You
favorite,
can you take it wherever you want, buddy.
yeah, my favorite analytics project was when I actually did my data science class at that school, General Assembly. They let us pick a data set and a line of questioning for our final project, and it took me a while because it's hard to come up with a line of questioning about data you don't care about. But I found I hope this isn't too dark for our little podcast, but a data set on homicide, and it was just a crazy different data set to analyze than most of the stuff we come across. Because I mean, yeah, sales dashboards and models for success, those are interesting and everything, but having a real life example of something that I could show the presentation to anyone, they actually had me come back to the school a couple times and just do like a 1 hour introductory, like, are you suited for the data science class kind of thing. And I showed this to people who didn't really know the methods that I was using. And the beauty was they understood what I was talking about, based on, what crimes are solved, what kinds have we started solving more over time, and how many criminals indeed get away. So,
Very interesting. All right,
yeah.
Dennis, it was great talking with you today. Thanks for coming on and being a guest. And well, I'll see you soon.
Lovely to be on our podcast, Matt. Thank you.